Yeah.
Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for April 27th, last part of April 2020. We've survived another week of coronavirus. I read somebody was saying we're not in quarantine. That would be if we were actually sick. We're in, self-isolation or whatever it's called. The whole world is...
Government-enforced lockdown. Is that what they said?
No, I don't know if they said government-enforced, but, quarantine is if you're actually sick. Mm. And so all of this is just something else.
I used to enjoy scrolling through Facebook and Twitter, but the last 2 weeks have just been... intolerable. I like good fights. I like good arguments. But this has just been awful. Everything that pops up in my feed is either the government has tried to kill us all by forcing us to be home with our spouses or whatever, or kill the church or whatever, and take away all our freedoms. And if you agree with the lockdown, then you're a fascist. And then secondly, on the other side, if you don't want us to be shut down and you would like to go out and, buy stuff and go to church, then you hate old people and you want to kill them.
That was the Cuomo version.
You're also a fascist, but just for a different...
Yeah, reason. Cuomo was like,
yeah,
you want everyone to die.
Right, right, right.
So I had a hard time.
So my feed is filled up with that, with everybody on it. And so I posted that article last week. About, trying really hard to grasp.
Not to demonize the other side.
Right, like someone who disagrees with you on this might not be a monster.
Like.
And might have a reasonable reason for disagreeing with you. And people on the thread, they just couldn't do it. Most of them could, but some of them just could not say, okay, well, maybe those who oppose me have a reason for it that is not evil.
Like, I don't. I just stopped kind of, and it's great. It's good that I've been so busy because I only have 5 minutes to scroll through Twitter at the beginning of the day or the end of the day. And then, I just haven't had time. And yeah, when I go on, it seems, I saw somebody today though on Twitter say, I finally come to the point in my life in coronavirus that I no longer care about whether Roman Catholics accept my orders. And he said, this is so freeing for me. I never thought I would get here. And it's not because I don't really care. It's because I don't care about anything anymore. It was pretty great. He's like, I'm giving up on my whole life.
I posted some, so I get, everyone knows my self-worth hinges on Sunday morning attendance. So I punched that.
Yeah, I saw that and I thought you were being funny.
Well, so for the last 3 weeks, I haven't cared. It's been no one can come. So I've been kind of off the hook, but also our viewership has been up. So you 50, 60 people watching on Sunday morning, but then yesterday there was something wrong with our feed or something. We only had 30 people or 40 people and the same crushing you're a worthless pastor came crashing down. So yep. People on the thread said that. They said, okay, we'll just wait because you'll be watching a little eye at the corner of your screen, and that's right, that's what happened.
fun Well, so I don't think I'm the one that thought this first, but I don't remember who it was. I have noted that this is a biblically apocalyptic moment, as in it is an unveiling of the hearts mm-hmm. and proclivities of humankind. And you can see some people are okay with the apocalypse, and some people are unglued by the apocalypse. But in the spirit of being helpful to all people, because we're all about love. Love, love, love. we thought it might be fun to do what can you do if it's actually too late? Like, the apocalypse is happening. The zombie apocalypse is happening. You're wandering around with your gun and your can of beans. But it's not actually yet the end of the world. And so you're going to have to carry on living for a while. Is it too late? Is there anything you can do?
But maybe we should make the problem more acute. It's not just that it's a zombie apocalypse. It's that you realize suddenly that the person you're living with
is Satan.
You can't deal with each other. Because up until now, you've had things to distract you both from yourselves. You've had to be, you know, work. Maybe you work outside the home. And, you know, the children have been also kind of absent. But now
you're all together.
You're in the same house for a long time.
And you were fine until they moved the date back. Like, you were okay.
I can do because May
you thought
1st.
It was going to be April 29th. But then they moved it to May 15th. And you deeply fear, because you're not an idiot and you can see stuff coming down the pike, that either it'll be moved back till June or it will happen again later in the year. And you may not have time to get that divorce finalized before it happens again. Or buy a second home, because you've lost all your money, and so you might be stuck inside with somebody that makes you feel very sad and in psychic pain all the time. Just walking into the room with that person makes you feel in pain.
Now, we should also say, you know, that this psychic pain can also be there if you're just a single person and not married. That's what single means. Okay. And, you know, you're used to distracting yourself with lots of things. Like, if you're, you know, going out with people, being, or, you know, maybe you're more extroverted than introverted, and you're used to having, this can happen to introverts too, though. You're used to having more stimuli in your life that would keep you from the gaping maw of yourself.
The gaping maw of yourself.
And now you're stuck with you inside, and
well, for what
tough.
Feels like forever,
right? So I mean, just as a confession, I mean, I'm an introvert, so this is really not hard for me. I mean I really have noticed very little difference. The only hard thing is Sunday morning, because I miss the church, and I do miss, strangely, the fellowship of people in
I'm
person.
Glad to hear that.
No, yeah, but the rest of the week I'm totally fine. I mean,
that's really discouraging for everyone.
I was made for just such a time as this. I mean, if you could take away the death and the
collapse of the economy,
I'd be super happy. But, you know, those things are there. So I would rather my unhappiness than people die and the economy collapse. So I do hope it doesn't.
I mean, that's very generous of you.
Thank you.
I'm glad that you can.
I recognize that it would require salt. I mean, that if I could give up my momentary pleasure for the
betterment of all
world,
humanity,
I would do that.
You would do that. But as Ma says in Little House on the Prairie, I'm gonna not actually quote her here, you take two roughs with the smooth. No, wait, that's Anatole and P.G. Woodhouse. Like,
how do you confuse P.G. Woodhouse with Laura Ingalls Wilder?
But basically, every bad thing has a little good thing that goes with it. So, like, when Ma and Pa settled accidentally on Indian territory and then they had to pick up in the middle of the night and move, that was really bad. But they got to eat potatoes for the first time in a year and a half. No. They ate all the potatoes they had, and then they left and didn't eat potatoes again for a long, long time. So it's just like that. There's always good mixed in with the bad, and it's okay to feel happy about the good things. It doesn't mean that you're not, like, noticing that it is really bad. I do think that there's this sort of secret guilt, like, oh no, I'm not completely miserable and I'm not dying, but I better not say anything because so many people are miserable and dying. Yeah. But it's okay if you're okay. Like, that's fine. Don't feel guilty. There are other things to feel guilty about, like actual sin. So, anyway,
we're here to make people feel guilty a little bit today, just for not doing the work beforehand.
Okay, yeah. If you didn't do the work beforehand.
If you're feeling terrible psychic pain in your marriage, for example, probably because you didn't listen to our advice.
That just sounds mean.
Well, I'm sick of people not listening to us. We tell them the right thing to do and they just don't do it.
Okay. Well,
so back. We had an 18 marriage tips back last fall. We should post a link to that one.
Okay, because you could still do some of them. So one thing, I think we shouldn't do very many things because I can see that you're raring to go here. So we shouldn't let you do that. We should try to curb your enthusiasm just a touch. But one thing that I feel like a lot of people have been confused over the years about what we meant by date night. And I saw that on Twitter doesn't listen to me. It's probably because I don't tweet. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe there may be a correlation between me not tweeting and Twitter not listening to me. That date night is not a gimmicky, expensive activity that happens once a quarter where you go out and spend a lot of money.
Right.
This is why date night is wrong word. Nobody is hearing me.
They keep thinking it's we have to go out. And
okay, well, and now you can't go out.
Go out like once a month maybe for an actual other place when we used to be able to go out. But date night for us has always been typically
inside
the house.
But okay, so on Twitter, people were posting like, oh, look, you guys, we can still do date night. We'll just make a fake movie theater. We'll get all our cardboard and like make movie screens and we'll have fancy dinner in our van. Okay, actually, that's a smart thing to do. Date night is still like complicated, and that's not the point, especially if you try to do it and then you argue with each other the whole time about how angry you are. So I think we should just reiterate very briefly what date night is, or any time that you speak to the other person honestly and openly about who you are and what things are troubling you and going on in your life.
So The whole purpose of date night, doing it once a week, is you set aside every distraction. You set aside...
It's like...
You set aside your...
Being with God.
It's not that you do an activity together, right? There's a place and lots of great times to do activities together. That's great. But I wouldn't necessarily call that date night, because what that does is it distracts you again. And the purpose of date night is to be undistracted and have to deal with all your stuff. Right? So once a week... Not just when the pressure of your relationship builds so great that you have a big knockdown, drag out fight and scream and throw things at each other. Date night helps you avoid that.
Because you practice talking to each other regularly.
So you sit down with each other and then you let one another unload everything that's been going on in their lives for that week. Yeah. And even if it's hurtful to you because it's something about you that's hurtful to them or it's just whatever, but you have to let the pressure out with the person you're married to. There's another thing I want to kind of caveat because a lot of people
are like, I can do this with somebody else,
with my best friends or with my, you know, no, your best friend now that you're married. And this is another thing that is come into controversy lately. No, your best friend now that you're married is your spouse. That's how it's supposed mm-hmm. to be. If it's not, then that's something to work on. Because then
you need to be, because you will experience deep psychic pain with the person you're married to in a way that doesn't happen with any other person in the world. And that is because you've been knit together by God.
That really happened. It's not just something that
and so the pain that you experience at the hands of that person is much greater than it is with any other human being.
but also the capacity of that person to give you comfort and peace is greater than anyone else. So you're not going to find the solace with your best friend, maybe, that you found before marriage, now that you're married.
Yeah.
Because now the solace and comfort and help is supposed to be relocated from parents, brothers, sisters, friends, fellow church members to your spouse.
Right. So you need to learn how to talk to each other. And I think a lot of people don't know how to do this anyway in regular life. Clearly from social media, no human beings in modern society today know how to talk to any other human being.
The same dynamic you see with the people with the closers versus the openers, like if you disagree with me, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Seems to have crept its way into many marriages or many.
So if you're doing something that I don't like, or I don't approve of, or I don't understand, it must mean that you're wicked and bad.
Or stupid and ignorant.
So what's really important,
or there's something very wrong with you that I've got to fix, but not with you, apart from you.
Yeah, I'm going to still fix it somehow. I'm not sure how, but I'm going to work on it. Okay, so the date night thing, or really we're talking about a regular conversation. And if you're in quarantine or you're inside right now, maybe this could be something that happens every day. Mm-hmm. You know, don't wait till the end of the week when you've all been in Zoom meetings all week long and you're exhausted. Schedule this in once a day where you begin to try to tell each other what's going on in your mind and heart and body and spirit. And then you have to take turns. So one person would say, I'm not coping very well, and XYZ happened. Mm-hmm. And then the person listening to you would say that back to you. So what I hear you saying, and try to interpret it a little bit. Like the underlying thing that I think you're saying is, you're really anxious about the future. Is that what you were saying? Or you're worried about having a job that we're going to have money at the end of the week, you know, or you're worried, that one of our children is going to get sick and die, something like that. And then you, the person who started, can say, oh, yeah, that's partly right. I am really anxious. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's this other thing here that, okay.
You might notice what Anne's just said, what you just said.
Yeah, because I'm literally right here.
This is great. But what? So what that means is you're not always hearing the other person's words and filtering it through the grid of whether or not it's a hurtful to you or insulting to you, or whether it's about you. You're really going out of yourself for a minute
to try and hear
that person. And then one of the biggest communication breakdowns is when you're hurt or you're shamed or something, when someone else is talking to you, you're always on that. Oh, is this person trying? Is this an attack? Is this an insult? Yeah. Is this person doing something wrong again? Like this person always does. Stop that.
Yeah, that has to go away.
You can talk about you. So right, this is the first point. When that person is talking, you're studying that person in a compassionate way, helping that person to bring out depths of the heart the things that are bothering. And then when it's your turn, you can say, okay, let me share with you. I'm feeling a lot of shame about this. And when you say this, sometimes this makes me feel that way. But you're not looking for offense.
Right. The thing that the anxiety that you're expressing makes me feel inadequate because I feel like it's my job to earn the money.
Right.
Or another one, like,
that's
when
a big
you...
one, sticking yourself in that, because like sometimes women feel, you say, like, I feel very worried about our future or whatever. And I'll feel threatened by that.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like it's my job to take care of you and the family when you feel insecure. So I have to just stop there.
Right.
And let you continue to talk. And then later, when you're finished and it's my turn to talk, I can say, I feel really insecure about that. I feel like I'm not doing the job I should be doing.
Okay. So here for the nexus point for us is I am always anxious and stressed by the amount of work that I have. Mm-hmm. And I So for instance, this week, I'm overdue once again on my quarterlies for the government, for my homeschool quarterlies. I am always late on these. And the day that goes by me, I then begin to just have serious burden that I carry around, and then it builds up, and it takes me longer and longer to do them because I'm just so anxious about doing them. And the reason I don't do them on time is because I'm doing other things that are also very important. So like I have a deadline, a shorter deadline this week. I have my quarterly. I have a long-term deadline on my book, and I'm supposed to be actually homeschooling, right? Okay. I compress all that down in time, and I'm then irritable because I'm anxious. And I accuse you of not caring about what I've got going on, which makes you feel like I don't think you're doing any work. And then, and then I have extra work to do because you're not a good, like, you're not working hard enough. You're not earning enough money. It spirals. So it's really hard for you to let me list the work that I have and know that when I'm listing it, it's not because I'm accusing you of not helping me, because I'm not. But that's what you feel. Mm-hmm. You feel accused when I'm listing my work. So I list my work. Then you have to say, okay, I hear that you have a lot of work. While you were listing it, I felt accused. I know that's not what you're doing. And then I can say, oh my word, of course I'm not accusing you. This is,
right,
you know, the pit that I dug for myself. Then you can say, I'm really anxious about, you know, all the money in the world going away. I don't know. It just goes in a spiral.
So, right. So, but see, without, we'll have it self-awareness, like without that conversation could go really badly, really quickly. Like you could start.
And it has
talking,
done.
Yeah, it has before. You can start talking about your work, your stress. I said, why don't you just get over it? Why don't you just.
Or as I know, it's like,
I mean, have you
considered,
you do, I don't feel like that.
Just wake up and like, can't you just wake up earlier in the day?
Yeah.
Why don't you stay up later and work? Like, why did you waste all that time?
Right.
Doing that other stupid thing. That's not even a thing. Like, right.
So I've gone from just listening to you tell me what's wrong to, I feel shame about this, so I've got to help her fix it.
Okay.
And one way to help her fix it is to show her how she's misusing her time.
Right. Okay. Now, this isn't just the, well, I just want you to listen to me.
Right.
And don't ever fix anything.
No.
This is actually the first step, because I often do want help. Like, I do actually need you to help me. I did mismanage my time. Mm-hmm. But I can't accept your help if you shame me, accuse me for mismanaging my time. And you can't offer help
if I feel like
I'm accusing you.
Right.
So we both constantly have to back up and say, I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. The way that I said that indicated something other than I'm actually feeling or meaning to say.
Right. So you might be listening to this and say, well, this is like impossible. How can I even do this?
Or that's not my issue.
Whatever your issue is. But I mean, me and my wife never talk like this at all. And then, okay, well, part of this is because 18 years we've done the date night thing, right? And if you've been counseled to do date night, and you just decided to blow it off, and then now suddenly you're with your husband or wife for extended periods of time. This is, you're out of practice. You haven't practiced.
You haven't
learned how to do it.
You can't just do it overnight. So right. Now that you're inside, and maybe you only have 2 weeks left of coronavirus, but maybe it's a month. Or maybe it's going to happen more later in the year. What should you do to begin doing this? Okay, what, you go first. What do you think a person should, what's the very first thing they should do? Because what if the person that they're married to doesn't want to do this? How do you do this with somebody who's already so hurt they can't even be in the same room with you?
Well, I mean, I think it's.
Well, I would say the first thing you do, if you're the person who wants to do this and the other person is really in pain and you're really in pain, the first thing you have to do is in a meaningful way communicate respect and honor for that person, man or woman.
I was going to say something else, but yeah, but that's right.
So, Can I go ahead. Yeah.
Not only respect and honor for the other person, but also humility about yourself. So if you probably the reason the communication is broken down so much is because just like you feel hurt, your spouse feels hurt or disrespected or whatever pain. So you go to that person if you want to have a conversation, a real conversation. Say, look, I know I've really hurt you, and I've insulted you, or I've offended you, or I've disrespected you, and I'm sorry.
I don't even know exactly how I've done that.
I want to fix this.
Yeah.
So even if you don't, even if doing that makes you grit your teeth and think, do it.
Yeah.
If you really want to fix your marriage, if you want to fix your relationship, do it.
If you're in pain with a child, even like supposing you have a teenage child and you and the child are in just a lot of pain, or a child with a parent, you could go to the person, any person, and say very plainly, I'm in pain. I can see that you're in pain. I don't know what has happened. I don't know why we're fighting or why we are in so much grief, but I want, and here it's just like, you can just repeat these words even. I want you to know that I value you. I have honor for you. I respect who you are. I love you. I want to know who you are. I want to show you who I am, and I would like to know who you are, even if it's going to be painful to me.
So it requires you taking the first step, really. And that's always the hardest one to take because we are by nature reciprocal creatures, and we want to know
that it's going to end well.
Right.
You can't know if the other person will actually engage with you if you do this. So, but you could still try to do it.
So really you have an opportunity to fix a lot of things in your marriage during this time. The way that would be thwarted is if you decide, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to get on the phone to my friends or messaging my friends and complaining about my spouse.
And continue to demonize the other person. Yeah,
demonize my spouse. Like he or she is whatever. Well, you'll never fix me. What's going to happen is the relief valve of work will start back up again, or leisure, some kind of the regular activities of life will start back up again, and all the problems that came to the surface during the coronavirus will just be smothered again under.
Okay, so supposing the person says to you, you do this, you go to them and say, I respect you. I would like to know who you are. And that person blows you off. Of course, they're probably going to blow you off because they're in psychic pain. So you're going to just let it sit for a bit, and you're not going to accuse them in this period. You're not going to continue to accuse them you might feel very, very angry, but you're not going to, and I think it's fine to express anger, but you're going to try really, really hard not to express moral indignation or outrage at the behavior or manner of the other person. You might say something, but you're not going to impute morality to it, even if you see it as evil. And then in a little while, you're going to repeat your statement of admiration and respect. I think that you're really good at something and name something. I am grateful that you are doing this thing. Mm-hmm. I respect you.
That's huge. I mean, that's what we tell Mary in premarital counseling. One of the big things is, studying your spouse to find the good and articulate that when you find it. And instead of studying your spouse to find the things that really irritate you and articulating that when you find it. So it's a habit of mind, really. It's a discipline of your thoughts, because you can really let your thoughts go crazy. Mm-hmm. And the tendency, the natural fallen sinful tendency of the human person is to attribute wickedness to everyone else but yourself. So that becomes even greater within the hothouse of marriage, right? Because there's all sorts of opportunities for you to demonize your spouse.
So one thing that happens, I mean, a lot of, there's a lot of talk about, you know, women need love, men need respect. That's actually true. But women also need respect. Mm-hmm. If a woman, I think, feels those two things, those two emotions, love and respect, are really tightly bound.
They are.
So a person who feels disrespected feels unloved. Mm-hmm. And a person who feels unloved feels disrespected.
Right.
You don't need to worry about your five love languages right now.
No.
Although maybe
I can say,
you need to say right. to the person with words, I think that you're a good person and I wanted to be here with you and I respect you or I honor you. I think that you're a worthy person to be with right now and to have this conversation with. Because probably all of your sort of nonverbal communication has been indicating to the other person that they, you don't want to be with them. You don't think that they're valuable. You don't want to, you don't think it's worth trying. They're not good at anything. To mitigate against those nonverbal cues that you probably didn't mean to send, you can use language to begin to reconstruct the dam that's been broken down for that person and their sense of themselves. You would want to follow it up with nonverbal cues of being open and, okay, this is going to require that you, the person who initiates this, absorbs an immense amount of pain, and you may not feel up for that. What should you do then? If you're in pain, too much pain to try.
It's pain now or pain later, really. Would you rather have the slow ebbing, constant psychic pain of being separated from your spouse intellectually, morally, I mean, spiritually, emotionally for the rest of your life? Or do you want to go through the very painful process of undoing, getting the thorn out now, and then being able to walk on your feet again?
Yeah,
because it's gonna continue. It's not gonna get better.
No,
it's
magic. There's no magic here.
Right.
And there's no trick. Like what we're saying is that you need to absorb. You need to do the opposite of Glennon Doyle Melton, who says if you die to yourself, you can never get it back. Martyrdom is the worst thing. What? You're not being asked to be
is
martyred.
Is Christian a Christian?
No, she's not a Christian at all, but she self-identifies that way or sells her books in that category. Incidentally, I guess Carl Jung said that the greatest pain of a child is the unlived life of the parent. That is so malarkey.
Wait, what?
The greatest pain of the child is the unlived life of the parent.
What does that mean?
I mean, I've never heard anything dumber. What does almost that mean? It means that you need to go live your life and fulfill yourself. Otherwise, you'll be causing psychic pain to your child.
Yeah. My greatest regret as a child is that my dad didn't quit his job and go off and be follow his dreams and leave my mother. That would have made me really happy.
It's so asinine. And just like bald lie from the pit of hell. So, cause what I'm saying is here you are in your house, you're actually giving up your life for the sake of people you don't even know. And you may think that that's like overblown because no one, what is coronavirus? So, like you may think that it's actually bad that we're all locked away, but you're choosing, you're obeying the people in authority over you, even if you think they're wrong, for the sake of other people, even for the sake of those people who you think are wrong. So in a macro scale, you're already dying to yourself, everyone in this world right now, across the world too, not just America. Okay, in a macro sense, you're already doing what the gospel requires you to do, and it's painful. So go ahead, you're already in pain. Take it down to the micro level and die. Continue to die to yourself. in a smaller scale, which means saying to somebody you think is wrong and bad,
right,
I'm counting you as more significant, more worthy of honor than myself, more worthy of love than myself. I'm going to die a painful death right now for you. And you can have the power to do that because it's not just your death. Jesus went ahead of you and died that death. And this is the key, which I heard somebody say online. I think I did know this before. Jesus rose again. So your death isn't nothing and it's not ultimate. That's the key. You can die a small death now because it is not the biggest death of all, the greatest love of all. You can die to yourself because Jesus is alive and he can take care of you forever. And so you're not actually dying. I think that's really key. It just feels like you're dying.
It feels like death.
That's because it's truly painful. It is a true death, but it's not an ultimate death. So
right. Now, another benefit of really taking this time and fixing things with your spouse, repairing things, is that will have ramifications for all of your relationships. Because if you haven't had your spouse as your best friend, as your comforter, as your help, under Jesus, of course, but in this life, you've probably been leaning on other people in a weird way. You've probably been relating
in an inappropriate,
way to other people, not in a sexually inappropriate way necessarily, but you've been putting too much relational pressure on other people.
Who can't bear it.
And you've probably been hurt by the people in a way you don't necessarily need to be hurt when they can't be that thing for you or that person for you that you need them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably not been able to communicate well with others because you haven't learned that communication with your spouse. So you don't know how to work out relational differences in church or in
work
because the training ground of your marriage, which is supposed to be the place where you're sanctified and humbled, and
you may be having a really hard time communicating with your kids right now,
right?
Because you're not doing this with yourself. Actually, I would go back a step further because I think you can begin this with God even before you go to your spouse.
Absolutely.
Because I bet if you're having a hard time with your spouse, I bet you're not saying what you need to say to God. And that means actually bearing your soul before Jesus before you do anything else. And you may think that you've done that, but I would bet that you haven't looked underneath everything at the prior motivations and feelings that you have before you've acted in any kind of way. So you may be coming to Jesus and saying, I need this or I need that or I'm unhappy. But you could also say, I'm ashamed. I feel accused. Mm-hmm. I feel not valued.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so angry with so-and-so. I feel like all these people choose other people before they choose me, and I'm the last one to be chosen. I feel out of control. I feel inadequate. And you say all those things, maybe write them on a piece of paper so that you can see them. And you say to Jesus, I want you to see this. And then I want you, Jesus, to communicate to me that you do value me, that you did die for me. Because it's possible he has the power to communicate that into your soul. That's actually what Christians feel and experience in not just an intellectual way. So before you have your initial conversation with somebody, go do that. Because so then when you go to your child and you feel disrespected by your child or out of control, you don't know what to do with them, you can reflect back to your children what they're saying to you. So when your child says, I just can't log in, I'm not going to, you can say, okay, well, tell me a little bit more about why you can't. Are you just really frustrated? Are you afraid? Are you lonely? What's going on? And then you listen And then you say back to your child what you think they're saying in such a way that they finally agree with you. That will break open intractable situations with parents and children. Yeah.
But maybe also that not having a really close relationship with your spouse has caused you to try and create that with your kids. And that's also pretty decided.
Yeah, don't.
They can't bear that weight.
No.
So you don't want to. So the epicenter of your relationships with everybody else should be your marriage.
Okay, so we don't have much longer. What happens? I think we should give some advice for people who discover that their spouse is doing something really harmful, or thinking something really harmful, or behaving in a harmful way, and they don't know what to do. What should they do?
Well, I mean, I think I guess it's hard to speak without having an actual example, but let's say it's porn addiction. Like, you found out your husband is,
or any, we can say any addiction, but we're going to just use porn as a thing.
Right. So here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to go and say, first thing, I'm going to call my mother, I'm going to call my sister, I'm going to call my aunt, or I'm going to call my friend, or I'm going to call my friend at church and say, my husband is looking at porn. I need your help. Do not do that.
Unless you're about to do what we're telling you not to do. Like, if you need some coaching about how to go to the person.
Yeah,
then you should call your pastor.
Pastor, yeah, I would say that.
You can't call anyone. It's that you should call a very trusted pastor or counselor in your life who you can listen to and who will tell you some hard things. But that shouldn't be
I think that should be the last resort too. I mean, going to anybody else first is the last resort. Like, if you just can't, you just couldn't talk to your spouse first. And I can't think of why you couldn't, actually. I think the rule should be go to your spouse first.
I can just hear people telling you that that's not even possible.
I think it is possible. I think it's very possible, because that's what marriage is. You are naked and unashamed before each other, right? So your spouse, husband or wife, has been looking at porn and you've caught them.
You feel shame.
You go to that person. You say, look, I know what you've done. I saw you, or I heard you, or whatever, and I'm really hurt by this. Can we talk about it? Mm-hmm. And
then they're going to either deny or blame you.
Right.
And you're not going to turn it back on them and further deny and or further blame and shame them. That's not what you're going to do.
Right. You're going to say,
you're going to actually, even though it's an immoral thing to do, you're going to take the moral question off the table.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's bad that your spouse is lusting after other people, but that's not that condemnation and shame is not the first.
It's not your first. It's not the first. The first weapon in your arsenal.
Right. The first place to go is, okay, you're hurt. You're in pain about this, and so you go to your best friend, and you say, this is really painful for me. This really hurts me. I don't know how we can work this out, but something needs to change here. Can you help us? Can you help our relationship? Can you help our marriage? I'm coming to you first because I love you, and I want this.
You're talking about the actual spouse now.
Right. And you're not, the reason this is important is because it gets the spouse on the side of what I've done is something that hurts us. I'm not being spoken to like a child who needs correction. I'm not being spoken to like a wicked person who is dirty beyond, and nasty,
yeah, and ugly, and beyond help.
I have something I can do to help us. I can this could be our burden rather than just my sin.
You're also saying to the person, I really want to be with you, even though you've hurt me,
right?
Even though I'm really sad and even angry right now. I really want to be with you. That's one reason why I'm so hurt.
Right.
Whereas if you go to a lot of other people, you're saying to that person, I don't want to be with you.
And if that person hears that you've gone to like 20 different people about his porn addiction or her porn addiction, that's going to be really hard. That's going to be really hard. In fact, even if he doesn't hear it, you've in some sense shamed that your spouse in the eyes of others. You've reduced that person in the eyes of others, and it's unkind. Now, okay, let's say you do all that, and
they refuse to hear you.
Intransigence. I don't have a problem. I don't need your help. Whatever. Then would be the time. Okay, well, let's call in.
I need help. The church. But I'm going to tell you
we're calling in the church. Okay, not like a bunch of little friends, but you're calling in the church in the form of the pastor, in the form of elders, but some kind of overseeing Christian loving discipline, not discipline. Don't think punishment discipline. Think help.
I need help because we're not hearing each other.
Yeah.
We need to have somebody else come in and help us tell each other what we're really. And
you
should
tell your spouse, if you can't listen to me, I have to go to the church and tell the pastor, or I need to tell so and so so we can get some help, because I can't live with you, you know, doing this constantly, or you know, being this way constantly.
Yeah.
And that should, so either you can agree with me, we can work on this together, or I'm going to go to somebody else. But one way or another, this has to change in our marriage.
Yeah. It's totally fine to say that.
Yeah.
And then go for help.
Yeah.
And hopefully the help that you get won't be like, okay, just go back and try harder. But go back and try to do some of the things that you wouldn't. You know, like talk in a different way, try hearing the other person, because again, it's a painful thing to have to listen to another person who you think is wrong about something key. You're going to be looking at really hard, painful time. So you're going to need the power of Jesus and the Holy Spirit constantly in prayer and supplication. And you're going to have to go in knowing that you might feel humiliated, that the depth to which you will feel your own wrong might feel intolerable. And so that is going to have to thrust you back again and again on the mercy of Christ, who, though you are in some deep sense wrong, wants to be with you and mm-hmm. can cope with that and can eventually make it right again.
Yeah, I mean, I
okay, well,
we've solved everyone's marriage problems, I think.
Yeah, I think that's great. So
just go and do that.
Go thou and do likewise.
We didn't talk about the single person, so we should probably do that next time.
Yeah, maybe next time. If you haven't done internal work to be satisfied with Jesus or satisfied with your life, what can you do? Maybe we'll do that next time. So I don't know what the state of blogging is going to be this week, but or any engagement on the internet for me. I'm still really piled up with work. So we'll see. But we will hopefully run into you on social media, all of you, our listener. So thanks for listening.